African unity has been brought to question on many occasions. Africa's modern founding fathers wanted an Africa that will not be divided by borders, nationality, or even tribe. Before this, Africa was divided by kings who wanted to consolidate their powers by bringing different people who had a common interest together. One of such kings is the focus of our story today. Hello, Jamit Fam. Welcome to another episode of Long Story Short. I'm your host, Liwa. Our story today takes us to a time when every man had to prove his worth by how much he could fight and how much he could kill, when weakness was not permitted no matter the circumstance. Today, we tell the story of Shaka Zulu. So, my dearest listeners, grab a coffee and take a sit, cause it's story time. Let us begin somewhere in between the Drakensberg Mountains in Southern Africa and the Indian Ocean. There lived a people who had a common history, language, and ancestry. However, they lacked unity. Unity might seem like a simple word, but it takes more than just a word. A prophetess named Sitai prophesied that a child will be born who will bring about a new order and a new nation. And as prophecies went, no one knew where the child would be born, to whom it would be born, or how the child would even bring about a new nation. Among the Langeni clan lived a princess named Nandi, who got pregnant out of wedlock for Senzangakona, the heir apparent of the neighboring Zulu clan. Since she was not married, her people thought she was suffering from a disease which causes a bulge and soreness in women called Ishaka. Initially, Senzangakona denied and rejected Nandi's pregnancy. But on reconsidering his status in the royal family, coupled with the fear of his father, King Zulu, he decided to pay her bride price, making her his third wife. This enabled her to give birth to the baby with Senzangakona's family. When the child was born, he was named Sigidi Senzangakona, because at that time, children naturally bore the surname of their fathers. But people called him Shaka due to his mother's presumed illness. However, the name also emphasized his illegitimacy. It was not all sunshine and milk for the young Shaka. His mother was a problem in his father's court. She was arrogant and behaved uncontrollably. There was only so much Senzangakona could take from her behavior. And when Shaka was 6 years old, his father threw him and his mother out of his court. Shaka and his mother returned to her people, the Langeni clan, but were not welcome. The people despised his mother, and among the young boys of his age, he was ridiculed and bullied while constantly being reminded of his illegitimacy. The Langeni later drove them out of the clan. However, they found shelter through Nandi's aunt among the powerful Mthethwa people ruled by Dingiswayo. As a teenager with the Mthethwa, Shaka was assigned to a military regiment of young men separated based on their age group. This regiment, called Amabutho, was not a standing army. Rather, they were used for labor, hunting exercises, policing the community, and sometimes in combat. Shaka must have been an outstanding teenager to catch the attention of Dingiswayo, who took him under his wing, becoming something of a mentor to the young lad. When Shaka's father died, Dingiswayo supported his campaign to claim his father's throne with the needed military assistance. Shaka ousted his half-brother Sigujana and installed himself as the head of the Zulu clan. Although still under Dingiswayo's authority, Shaka had more control over his territory than any of his mentor's vassals, even allowing him to conquer other nearby tribes, which included the Langeni clan. At that time, tribal wars were mostly a show of strength. There was very minimal bloodshed. Two sides facing off will stand at maybe 40 or 50 yards apart, and they will begin to haul their assegais, that is, light spears, until one side fled. Imagine a javelin throwing contest involving multiple contestants at the same time. That was how battles were fought. But if the opponent was pursued, the fleeing party had to just drop their light spears and surrender, and their lives will be spared. But Shaka, who stood at 6 feet and 3 inches, padded with muscles from neck to feet, usually went to battle with 3 assegais and a 5 foot 9 inch oval shield, while he wore a kilt of 4 stripes, a skin cape with black widow bird feathers, cowhide sandals, and white oxtails around his ankle and wrist. He was not satisfied with the way battles were fought. His warrior senses inspired him to change all of that. He discarded his cowhide sandals because he felt they could make him lose his balance. With the sandals out of the way, Shaka's agility increased in the battlefield. He could engage an enemy at close quarters. He deflected spears with his shield, then charged in for the kill. Hooking the enemy's shield aside with his own, he could then plunge his assegai into his victim. This tactic, he taught his warriors. So what did he do for them? Shaka rearmed his men with new assegais that had long blades but short handles, so they were no longer looking like javelin sticks. This forced them to fight at close quarters. He then instituted a regimental system based on age groups, quartered at separate villages and distinguished by uniform markings on shields and by various combinations of headdress and ornaments. He also introduced the buffalo horn formation, which his army used to trap their opponents before descending on them. The formation, as it is named, looked like the head of a buffalo with its 2 horns. Shaka became so feared and well known even in other tribes and kingdoms that he earned the name Nodumeleli, which means the one who, when seated, causes the earth to rumble. When Thingiswayo was murdered, Shaka took the opportunity to expand his territory. He was brutal in battle, and any village or clan who refused to show support for his kingdom was brought to nothing. With the expansion, Shaka's army grew in number to the extent that he could summon 50,000 warriors at once, should the need arise. Shaka was also a curious person who always wondered how things worked. He was always eager to learn from the white traders who had set up settlements close to his territory. One time, the whites resuscitated a woman who had collapsed due to high fever. Shaka and his people believed the resuscitation was a resurrection because they thought the woman was dead. But he wanted to be sure that the whites had resurrected the dead. So, he ordered a woman to be killed and asked the traders to demonstrate their power to resurrect her. Of course, they couldn't. At another time, he ripped the belly of a pregnant woman to see how the baby was growing in the tummy. That must have been gross. After the death of his mother, Nandi, Shaka became psychotic. He killed a lot of people without a second thought, under the guise that the mourning of his mother's death was insufficient and the people did not show enough grief. He even sent out his warriors to enforce the mourning on other villages under his command and instructed them to kill anyone who did not comply. And then he took it up a notch when he started killing people who mocked and bullied him as a child. As the day begins in the morning and ends at night to usher in a new day, Shaka Zulu's dominion over the Zulu tribes ended when he was assassinated by 2 of his half-brothers and a male servant. Although it might seem that Shaka Zulu was a tyrant in his little way, first-hand accounts portray him as a courteous, exemplary, and fearless leader. Shaka Zulu is regarded as one of the top military leaders from the African continent. He was more of a nation builder than a bloodthirsty authoritarian. The Zulu nation, found in modern-day KwaZulu-Natal province of South Africa, and others found in Zimbabwe, Botswana, and other parts of Southern Africa, take pride in Shaka Zulu, uniting them to be one people when he became king and said, "Let us have an identity and call ourselves Zulu people."
Care to share your thoughts about this episode? Leave a review or your suggestions on our platform or on iTunes. Join me on the next episode of Long Story Short on Jamit FM. I have been your host, Liwa.
Long Story Short was produced by Liwa and Aiko Rizu. This episode was edited, mixed and mastered by Aiko Rizu. Long Story Short is a production of Jamit Media.